are your investments performing? How are you keeping score of your real estate investments? And why is it important to keep accurate records of your properties when raising money? All of these questions will be answered today. Welcome to the Raising Capital interview series. I'm Russell Westcott, your host from the Real Estate Investment Network, your one-stop shop for all things real estate. The intention of this interview series is to help solve your biggest real estate challenge, and that is where to find the money to invest. Today, I'm going to introduce you to one of the top real estate accountants. Grab yourself a pen and paper, because you will be taking plenty of notes today. Our expert guest is George Duby, and he's going to provide you with some top-notch best practices when it comes to reporting the performance of your properties. George is a real estate investor himself. He is an accounting and tax expert. He's an author of two best-selling books and a specialist in the realm of real estate. He is a go-to expert in Canada for your real estate accounting and tax requirements. George, I know how busy you are. You operate a successful practice in Ontario. How are you doing today? And welcome to the call.
Thank you, Russell. Doing fantastic. Looking forward to a great weekend and nicely off of our busiest time of the year in terms of March and April and into now our planning tax season, which is a great time for tax nerds like myself, I guess.
It never stops, does it, George?
Hopefully not.
Well, if it does, then there's something wrong, right?
Exactly. Then we have big problems.
Yeah. You know, today's call, I've talked about the intention of today's call, is all about raising money. And one of the key team members you need on your team is a good accountant to make sure that you're properly reporting, properly in compliance with CRA, but more importantly, reporting to your partners. Before we get to all the details of all the questions, George, if someone is on this call and listening and they're not familiar with the name George Duby, can you maybe give us a quick snapshot of who you are and why we should be listening to you?
Absolutely. Real paraphrased, I guess, I like to describe myself as a tax partner at a mid-sized firm here in Ontario, Duby & Catini Chartered Accountants. We, based on the nature of our clients and our own personal decisions in terms of investing in real estate and what have you, our practice is focused on real estate investors. Not that we don't have other clients, but roughly speaking, I would suggest about 50% of our clients are real estate investors, and probably another 25% of our clients are what I would call real estate investors, but they also have another business, whether that be they have a medical practice or a manufacturing business, technology firm, et cetera, but we try and manage, if you will, from a tax and accounting perspective, someone's complete situation as compared to just an isolated segment of that. Then with, as you'd indicated, the background in terms of co-authoring some books that have done pretty well from a real estate perspective, and the fact that we've actually got a team of accountants as compared to just George Duby. So my partner is very, very strong in his background as well as in real estate. We jointly invest in real estate. He as well has a CPA, which helps us with our clients in U.S. tax matters. And then, as we like to describe it, of this firm of 20-ish people, one of the people in it as well has just over 40 years' experience in being a managing tax partner at national accounting firms, and that's not a bad backup, I would suggest, on the tax side in our firm. And we've got a very, very, very good team in my mind of practitioners such that if one of us isn't available for a question, something urgent is there, there are other people with real estate experience that can help our clients with tight situations.
So you are an expert in real estate, as you mentioned before. And for many of the people that probably don't know, you're also one of the a very active investor yourself, are you not?
I guess everybody's got a different definition of what that is, but certainly my wife and I have a number of properties, and we are actively looking for increasing the portfolio and continue to believe that that will be the case over the next 40, 50 years.
Well, it's actually quite interesting to find that you will find most people, most professionals, most people that own businesses will also hold a good portion of their wealth in real estate because they know the power of it. So you're an accountant, a tax expert. Would you say in your practice, as one of the busier practices that focuses on real estate experts, do you see a lot of people coming through your office requiring guidance around the whole topic of raising money?
I would suggest that probably 75 to 80% of our clients who are real estate investors are looking for help in that area. And of that 20%, at least half of them have the intention of doing so, just not at this point in time. They may want to acquire a few properties themselves, have a little bit of history before beginning to approach people. But sooner or later, it really doesn't matter how much money you have. You're going to run out if you're actively investing and continuing to build that portfolio. So it's pretty rare when someone comes in and doesn't want to have assistance with respect to that in terms of how to craft it from a tax, a legal, not that we're lawyers, but that protection element. How do we craft a structure so that we can do so in an effective manner?
So it is really, this is actually a very timely topic. It's something that comes across your desk all the time. And it's quite interesting on when we were having a discussion earlier in the week and all the frequently asked questions that we get. There's a lot of tax and accounting questions, aren't there?
Unquestionably. Maybe it's also based on the nature of my profession, but clearly we get a lot of that. And then we also get a lot of just more of, because we are investing ourselves, it's not just necessarily a textbook answer that's provided, but sometimes that practical answer is saying, yes, I know what the textbook says, but here's what you're really going to find.
George, are you saying that in the world of tax, there's not a right or wrong or a black and white answer sometimes?
In most cases, there's not such a thing as a clear-cut answer. There can be for a variety of topics, but usually when you're discussing raising capital is the primary example here, there's a variety of ways of doing that, and certainly not a boilerplate solution that's going to work for everybody. It's something that very much so is going to be tailored not only to the client, but to the client's current situation, meaning that as they progress and build their portfolio, change their minds in terms of where they're investing, how they're investing, what they're investing in, the answers are going to change as well for them.
Absolutely. Now, a little bit of a change of gear here. I ask this question of all the experts when I talk to them on these interviews, and that is, some people have the perception that if you're brand new and you're beginning that you can't find investors, it's difficult. From your perspective, as somebody who's an investor, someone who's raised capital, someone who operates a firm and sees people coming through on a daily basis, can a person buy real estate using other people's money if they don't yet have a tremendous amount of experience?
I agree with your comment. It can be more difficult initially, but certainly I think that everyone has the ability to raise capital. They may not know exactly where to start or how to start, but there's always going to be a close circle of associates, family, friends that they have that they can begin that process. And perhaps they're not raising a gazillion dollars on day one, but certainly they can get that process started, begin to establish some credibility, some experience, and that's going to, in most cases, we find blossom to make things easier and easier down the road. But I won't pretend it's not difficult to start.
It absolutely is more difficult if you don't have a proven track record, but it can be done. I see it all the time. So changing gears a little bit here. Now, you're an accountant, so we all know that. You operate a good-sized accounting practice. How important is it that investors keep good real estate experts, keep good, accurate records and up-to-the-minute records, and just good bookkeeping practices? How important is that, especially in the realm of raising money?
Yeah, I think there's probably, in my mind, one word that describes that, and I would suggest that's critical. Whether that's being able to demonstrate to your co-investors that you're on top of everything, you're in control, you have a willingness to show the investors, here's exactly what's going on, I have nothing to hide, and as well, because I'm so up to date on everything, should Revenue Canada come calling, or whomever, we have the information available, open book, and we can work with them through that, as compared to, gee, I really hope today is not the day that we get the call from Revenue Canada or the magic letter or et cetera, and or trying to duck investors' phone calls where they've got questions. And unfortunately, we do see some of that.
Well, it's almost without a doubt, every time I've ever heard of a problem with either a joint venture or raising capital, the problem starts, you know, it starts earlier, but the first time it rears its head is when somebody says, I've sent them a note, I'm looking for my year-end taxes, and it's been 2 weeks or 3 weeks, and I haven't got it. So it really, would you consider it, it's almost like if your books aren't in order, that's a symptom of a bigger problem.
Not only a symptom of a bigger problem, I would suggest, but also a symptom of bigger problems to come in that, and I'm sure you've seen many times where someone is finding out that they have a what I'll call a handful of properties. It's a little bit too much for them, and yet they're still trying to expand that portfolio, and it gets more and more out of control. So now it's pretty easy for investors to lose faith, and those around to lose faith, and then sooner or later, Revenue Canada does come calling, and it's not very difficult for them to find out that if the client's unable to produce documentation in a relatively speaking quick fashion, they're disorganized, perhaps that auditor should spend a lot more time there.
Exactly.
That's usually not a good sign.
And at the end of the day, if an investor sends a note off to somebody and they don't get back to them or can't provide reports on a timely basis, the question that creeps in their mind, if they're not keeping good track of the books, what else are they not keeping track of? And a breakdown in trust happens. And that's one of the fundamental building blocks of raising capital is you need to have the trust. Okay, so a couple other questions here, and some of these questions had submitted from people online through my RainSpace and many different forums. What are some of the risks that real estate investors can encounter on the road to raising capital? And I know you can speak very well into for a tax and accounting perspective.
Sure. In saying that, I mean, on the risk side of things, I mean, first of all, probably kind of the more of a legal aspect comes to that, which, again, obviously a lawyer is much more qualified to speak about. But in turning that around on the tax side or the credibility side in terms of providing numbers, we see people, perhaps they're, for lack of a better word, they're over-promising to potential investors or existing investors what they're going to provide them in terms of details, or the actual rate of return that should be expected, for example, on an investment. And all of a sudden, and we saw one scenario relatively recently where our client, what I would suggest, overpromised on timelines in terms of we're going to have an investment and in 2 years' time, or whatever the time provided was, we expect to refinance or sell this particular property. And they did so, I think they had a portfolio of 10-ish properties. And it turned out, however, that the refinancing and the sales of these properties weren't nearly as fast as were expected. The investors were holding on to lines of credit or had other alternative investments in mind, began to lose faith because these properties weren't being sold or refinanced. And now all of a sudden there's a liquidation sale. Everybody lost on the deal.
Right.
So to some degree, just kind of reining in what those expectations are, being honest with everyone as the process develops. So if there are troubles that are encountered, I think it's, again, critical that the investors are aware of what's happening. Level with everyone, call it like it is, move forward.
Absolutely.
The other probably main area that we see in terms of a risk side of things is that there's, again, from an accounting tax perspective, if you will, a little bit of a, what I'll call a cavalier attitude towards financial reporting or taking care of a government or filling out certain forms, and or even taking the time to ensure the correct structure is in place or the legal agreements are in place. And that has a unhealthy ability to draw in like a sick magnet almost, if you will, problems. So just this week I had a conversation with one of our clients, and again, they were trying to save on professional fees as they were building up some portfolio and involving investors. And to make a long story short, within a year's time, they maybe saved, I don't know what the figure is, $10,000 in professional fees. It was fairly developed, this portfolio. And they're just completing now about $350,000 of professional fees and settlements with investors and business partners, because they didn't spend the initial, in my mind, $10,000-ish. So wow, they saved $10,000, but I would suggest it cost a little bit. We have another client meeting with, yesterday, and we had acquired the client, about 4 years ago. And they came to us, they hadn't filed tax returns for their companies or themselves as individuals for about 10 years. And for whatever reason, Revenue Canada noticed that and wasn't quite as thrilled with that as they were, perhaps. But they had lost credibility, not just with investors, but with Revenue Canada itself. And they didn't take the time to just get the basic financial statements, tax returns, legal agreements put into place. And while we were able to get them out of literally a couple of different seven-figure tax bills, and we're working on another seven-figure one, again, for $5,000 to $10,000 a year, if had they spent that in terms of some bookkeeping and whatnot, they would have saved themselves a gargantuan amount of time, legal and accounting fees, going through the audit process, penalties and interest. And I'm not talking of a low figure. I mean, well over $500,000. And yes, they saved 10 grand, but again, it cost them $500,000 to save it. And not that that happens all the time. Don't get me wrong. I mean, that's obviously the rare exception. But in saying that, I'm dealing with two of them this week.
Wow. I guess this call is kind of timely. Those are fantastic case studies. How can a person not file taxes? Is it just a person can make a choice not to file their taxes if they want?
I guess at the end of the day, everybody makes a choice. But I think legitimately some people become, for one reason or another, personal circumstances perhaps, overwhelmed, and they don't want to deal with it. It's not that they're intentionally trying to deceive or be a bad person. Rather, they don't know where to start, perhaps, or they're so scared now of opening the envelopes. Literally, we'll have people come in. I would suggest every 4 to 6 weeks, someone comes into our office or phones us up or emails us to say, I haven't filed tax returns for 5 to 10 years. It's relatively, not that I'm encouraging that, but at least they're starting the process of getting caught up again. Actually, I just had lunch with one of the team members here and found out someone had come into the office this morning, and same situation. So it's not that it doesn't happen, but how it's addressed and whether it's addressed, I think, are key things. And going about it in a methodical fashion, if someone's caught in that situation, it is what it is. It's not going to be fixed immediately, but let's start opening the doors to communication with Revenue Canada, the parties that be. Let's fix the problem. Let's not just let it hide. And in many cases, the problem's not nearly as bad as people think it is, but there could be some bills to pay as a result, but much easier to address it head on as compared to wait for it to be a bigger and a bigger problem.
Yeah, the question didn't come from, it wasn't passing judgment or anything. I guess it's just so ingrained in myself that each year you have to do it. But wouldn't it be like a big red flag if you don't file a taxes 1 year or something?
It certainly doesn't help. And I don't know that anybody knows exactly to what degree the flag raising portion is, but certainly it is a flag, particularly where there's multiple years and particularly if there's taxes owing. And almost invariably, I would, as a rough number, suggest 90% of the time, where there is a bit of an amount owing, and you file a number of years late, Revenue Canada wants to take a look, and they're saying, okay, you were disorganized enough not to file on time. I wonder if you were disorganized enough that your bookkeeping's not so great, which obviously in most cases is the situation. And now they can potentially have a field day because you probably lost half the receipts, don't know where to find data. In the particular case I was dealing with yesterday, our clients lost a variety of that source data, and Revenue Canada is having a field day with that. Now, ultimately, do I think we're going to get 90% of that back from? Absolutely. But it's a process that should have never had to have been started in the first place.
Right. And just having a good practice from the beginning of accounting and tracking it. And really, with if we're talking just for real estate investors here, a good, simple bookkeeping system, there's not a lot of if you have one property, there's not a lot of transactions that come out on it. And you can really set up things very simply. You can set up a lot of auto withdrawals. You can set up a bank account per property or per joint venture, and then all the in and all the out, and you write the checks against that property, and your bank statement really gives you a good summary at the end of the month.
Absolutely. Most of it is not rocket science, and obviously for most real estate investors, they're going to see the same transactions month in after month in. It's relatively speaking routine. We do see the scenarios where people, they start off with the 1, 2, 3 properties, and they're 10 properties and 20, et cetera, and so they have more of what I'll call a scalability problem. But that's something that should be relatively easy enough to address. And whether it's done internally or hired out, it's not the end of the world. Just keep on top of it.
Yep. And for hiring out purposes, you can, budget it right in on your initial pro forma up front. I usually tell people you can budget in $10 per property per month is a reasonable fee. I pay about that myself, and some might be a little less, might be a little more, but and just have it budgeted right into your pro forma from the beginning.
I think putting it in, so whether someone is doing it themselves or ultimately going to have someone else do it, go ahead, put that into the projections, because you also, I would suggest, don't want to be in a position where you've grown the empire, if you will, and all of a sudden you're no longer capable of doing everything yourself, and for whatever reason initially didn't think your time meant anything or shouldn't be paid for it, but for the sake of argumentation, it shouldn't have been. Sooner or later, it's going to be hired out to someone, whether that's another family member or the accountant or someone through the phone book in terms of general bookkeeping, or you hire your own employee, whatever it may be. There's still going to be a cost of doing that, whether that's an opportunity cost or an actual cost.
Absolutely. So switching gears just a little bit here, are there any ownership structures that you recommend that might be more beneficial to create for when we're working with investment partners, or do the rules not change whether it's a person, working by yourself or working with a money partner?
There's a great deal of variability, I would suggest, actually, into it, in that, again, back to a comment of there's not a boilerplate solution. So at times we're looking at, again, depending on the amount of money is to be raised and what the intentions with the portfolio are, we may be working with someone that's trying to set up a limited partnership or a real estate investment trust. They may be trying to do joint ventures on a property-by-property basis. They may have corporations or trusts in place, or Peter Cantini, my partner, may all of a sudden be advising somebody on how to take care of their U.S. structure, for example, and playing with, again, limited partnerships and the different types of corporations and personal holdings that are possible in the United States. But whatever methodology that is, I think it's important for someone to, again, pop in. They're going to be talking with their advisors. Where are they now? What are they trying to accomplish? Where do they want to be down the road, so that some type of structure can be put in place where, again, it's going to be something that's scalable. It can grow in the future without having to change everything down the road. I think it usually creates less flags for people. It's easier to work into. And it may be something as simple as saying, here's a variety of different possibilities, and we think you should do everything personally. Don't worry about this, that, or the other thing, but at least our client can go away, sleep at night knowing, okay, I've done everything I needed to do. I've heard about all these fancy terms and fancy structures and fancy this, that, and the other thing, and it's not applicable to me. Great. They don't have to worry about it anymore. Or it may be that it's not applicable to them today.
Right.
And it's also something where that structure tends to, not all the time, but it tends to evolve down the road. So that, again, we like to encourage people to regularly be looking at whether or not the structure they have in place could be improved upon.
Right. I think you hit the nail on the head with a couple points there. Is get advice early, get advice often, and you will evolve, right? What you start off now will change over the future based upon your personal circumstances and your personal goals. So fantastic advice. So people listening to this call, everyone who listens to one of these calls, they'd like to have something that they can sink their teeth into. Do you have a couple tips or strategies that somebody could do tomorrow that they could just quickly and simply implement that would get the reporting and get themselves more organized?
I think to start off, actually, people need to know whether or not they have the right organization in place. And I offer what I will call a relatively simple test for that. And the basic idea in my mind is an investor will know if they have a good bookkeeping system or not, where in the hypothetical situation, Mr. or Mrs. Revenue Canada, they walk in and they take a look at the repair and maintenance expenses, for example, and say, I want to see these three receipts. If the investor is capable of walking over to a filing cabinet or whatever it may be, and producing those three receipts within, say, 5 minutes' time, I would suggest their bookkeeping system is probably excellent. If that's not an ability that currently exists, I think then the next step is to figure out how do we get it there. And then I think that's part of the process of looking for ideas, and whether that's looking, for example, on the RAIN forum and the various information available there, scheduling appointments with advisors, reading some books. How do I get my system so that I can produce that information, whether it be for Revenue Canada, whether it be for a co-investor? And while we're at it, when was the last time I really looked at my structure overall and had some advisors comment onto it to say, yes, this still meets my needs? And I think if we start with that portion of it, if the listeners say, okay, that makes some sense, let's give it a whirl, see if we can do that. Otherwise, let's start scheduling some meetings.
Perfect. And it's great that you bring that up and take a look at it. I'm doing this conference call from my office right now, and I'm sitting here and looking at four filing cabinets. And as I pull open one of the drawers, my wife is so on top of this and so organized. Each one's in its tab. There's four colored file folders for each property, and they're jammed full of stuff in chronological order and all that kind of stuff. So I don't know if we could pull it out in 5 minutes, but I bet we could do it within, I bet we could do it within 10.
I think that's pretty darn good.
Perfect. So a couple things. So now we're talking about investors and we have money partners. Do our accounting practices change when we have other people involved in a property transaction with us?
They do change, perhaps not as significantly as some people may initially expect, but some of those changes I would suggest are going to be, for the lack of a better word, more detail, where if you're playing with somebody else's money, if nothing else, I would suggest there's a moral responsibility to take care of that and be able to account for it and let everybody know where it is. It's one thing if you don't want to file your own tax returns. It's another thing if you're preventing your co-investors from doing so, or for them even being able to make knowledgeable investment decisions as to how the property's performing, what they should be doing with it. Certainly, as there's more investors, and depending on the particular structure that's in place, and whether that's Canadian or U.S., myself or my partner Peter will be recommending certain particular forms are filed on particular dates, for example, just to obviously keep Revenue Canada happy, or the IRS or the powers that be, and the investors themselves.
Perfect. Now, just as a supplemental to that same question, do things change even further if only one person's on the title and then you have a silent partner? Does things change further from that, or is it the same practices?
I think predominantly they're going to be the same, where there's someone that has legal ownership as compared to a complete beneficial ownership, meaning that, again, in theory, my name could be on title for all of your properties. It doesn't mean I own any of it, though. But with that beneficial ownership, that's where the reporting requirements and whatnot come into play. But in order for that to happen, where there is going to be a difference between legal ownership and beneficial ownership, it's absolutely positively critical to have documentation in place, obviously ideally before the transaction's even closed, that outlines what that relationship is. So in other words, and again, practically speaking, we do see the problem on a relatively regular basis where, whether it be a husband and wife, for example, or two independent co-investors, Revenue Canada starts asking questions as to who owns the property. The legal documents show one thing, tax returns show another. Now there's some major issues in dealing with Revenue Canada. One of our clients got into quite a bit of trouble where they were under the mistaken impression that they could change the ownership on an annual basis depending on who had higher or lower levels of income.
Okay.
For whatever reason, Revenue Canada wasn't thrilled with that concept, and they got hammered at the end of the day. But a demonstration can be made to Revenue Canada that here's what the legal ownership shows, but here's some legal agreements, a joint venture agreement or whatever it may be, as to what the ownership split is, and a consistent reporting of that from the tax returns and financial statements where there's corporation involved, for example, that provides a huge amount of evidence. And there was relatively recently a tax court case just to that effect where, again, Revenue Canada thought they had hammered the taxpayer, but the taxpayer was able to demonstrate that before the transaction occurred, they had a trust agreement written in place that was properly done up by the lawyer. And the judge very, very, very quickly threw the whole case out and told Revenue Canada they were wasting everybody's time.
Wow. So are you saying a couple questions? Is one is if Revenue Canada comes looking into, say, my books, and they see I own these properties with some other people and everything's been documented, can they then get curious and want to go look at that other person's financial statements as well to make sure that they filed on time and all that kind of stuff too?
Oh, absolutely. And stepping one more degree from there is to say, not only do they want to see whether that person filed, but they'd like to know, did they file on a consistent basis with yourself? So for example, if you had $10,000 of repair bills, maybe you expensed those, maybe you capitalized a portion of those. If your co-investor did something slightly differently, now all of a sudden, particularly for those subjective type of decisions, they've got a huge ability to come back to both of you and say, hey, neither one of you know what you're doing. If the two of you don't know what you're doing and you own the property, probably our number's better than or just as good as yours, and we'll let you know what we think. And as you can imagine, it won't be pretty.
And I would imagine Revenue Canada always errs on the side that gives them more taxes.
Yeah, I haven't seen too many cases where the opposite's true.
So it also could open up a little bit of risk, you know, for example, if, going back to that question about risk, if I don't properly report to my partners and we don't establish a track record, let's say we've owned a property for 10 years and we had no agreement, we had our handshake agreement, and I filed my taxes for 10 years, at the end of 10 years upon disposition, I might be holding the bag for 100% of the tax bill.
Provided you've got legal agreements in place that show that you don't have ownership of all the property, you'll never
right.
be put in a situation, I shouldn't say never, you're rarely put into a situation where you're responsible for someone else's tax reporting. However, where it could be the case, for example, is but in a spousal situation or a director of a company, for example, can still be held responsible for somebody else's taxes or the company's taxes, if you will.
Right.
But and it's something, too, to say, maybe adding to the example, although not initially what you were asking, But back to the bookkeeping side in Revenue Canada, I should have mentioned that should someone be reluctant to do their bookkeeping or what have you, Revenue Canada is more than happy to do the bookkeeping for you while we'll make estimates for what your taxes are. And we've seen that quite regularly.
And their estimation scales are not usually favorable.
No, it's usually not a good sign.
Actually, I just want to ask you, and this may have people of interest, something that you had mentioned earlier about changing the beneficial interests between spouses. Is that something that can be done? Is that something that has to, is there some rule? Obviously, there's rules, but let's say I own the properties in my name. I have a joint venture partner. Can I name my wife, who maybe earns less income than I do, as the beneficial interest of my share?
It's not to say that that cannot happen. It's to say that it's very debatable as to whether or not
beneficial
certain owners. Not so much the beneficial side of things. Actually, Revenue Canada has another way of dealing with spouses so that they have what they call the attribution rules, which in English means if originally, for example, you owned your family's portion of the property, if you will, and then it was transferred to your wife, Revenue Canada may take the position that the income from that property should, despite what the legal agreements say, be attributed back to you. In other words, on your tax return, you're going to have to declare that income, and they may or may not remove that income from your wife's tax return. So in other words, you could have the privilege of paying twice the amount of tax you otherwise would.
Oh, excellent.
So between spouses, it's something that has to be done really, really carefully, if at all. And usually we try and steer our clients away from that. A little bit different where there's a corporation involved, there's a little bit of a safer way of doing that, for example. But there's still some question marks based on some older court cases.
Okay. Bottom line, at the end of the day, get a personal opinion based upon your personal situation.
Absolutely.
So quick question here. From your perspective, talking about reporting and giving trust and comfort to our investors, how often do you feel we should report to our investor partners?
I think it can depend on the particular range, but as a general rule of thumb, I would suggest that on a quarterly basis is a reasonable figure to be expecting. Some people will do so monthly. Some people will do so annually. Some people, it seems, do it every 3 or 4 years, but that's a different problem. But overall, I would suggest quarterly is probably a reasonable number.
Yep, and I fully concur. One of the models I have within my business is typically at the beginning of the relationship, you report quarterly. After a year or two goes by, it becomes semi-annually. And then after a certain period of time, it's, you know, you have that conversation with your partner at your meeting, and you say, is it okay that you get one statement, everything's going well, I'll give you one statement unless something pops up, and I'll give you your statement before, you know, February 15th or something.
Yes.
And
yep.
It's usually once a year reporting then too.
Yeah, I think that makes perfect sense, particularly once that credibility and trust factor has been established and
absolutely.
Then life is good.
So do you have any simple templates that you can recommend to help us with our reporting? Do you just Excel spreadsheet, QuickBooks? What's your guideline there?
Again, this is going to be more, I would suggest, dependent on the particular situation and how everything's organized. We tend to ourselves be more favorable to the QuickBooks reporting function, for example, and which is easily exportable to a spreadsheet. The QuickBooks, in my mind, and there's other programs available, but the QuickBooks at least as well provides an ability to change the reporting period, if you will, for different investors. So, for example, you may be reporting on a calendar year basis, but you've got co-investor one that's reporting on a July 31st basis, and co-investor number two is reporting on a March 31st basis. You're not going to want, as the person in charge of the investment and the reporting, if you will, you're not going to want to have a formal set of financial statements done up every 3 months for each different investor, whereas with the QuickBooks, it's really, really easy to type in a different date for the reporting period, and everybody's happy. And so you can provide and individualize for different investors, depending on what's best for their own particular structure, you can fit and accommodate them and then accommodate Revenue Canada as well as a result of that.
And it's actually quite interesting that when you're talking there, I'm just going to provide a tip here for everyone of something that works really well for my business is make a note of when each of your partners' year ends are. Put that date in your Outlook or your calendar or your iPhone or whatever your system is, and give yourself a one-month reminder of when their year end is, and send them a note 1 month before their year end, and asking if they need their when they need their statements and all that kind of stuff. If you want a partner to be just over the moon impressed with you, you be proactive and give them the statements before they ever ask you.
Yeah, that's great. I think that's just an awesome idea. And I don't see that done nearly enough by any means.
And one of the things as another tip, this year I was very proud, and I'm not trying to toot my own horn, but I guess I'd be tooting my wife's horn because she does all this for me, is we got our taxes and our statements to our partners 2 weeks earlier this year than we did last year. And that's something you want to make note to your partner because that just gives them more confidence and more ability that you know what you're doing.
Absolutely. It instills so much confidence, and it eases the frustration as compared to, and we do see, and probably too many of the circumstances, the person's getting the information they require for their tax returns in mid-April. And that's usually not a great situation, of course. And sometimes that's self-inflicted. Sometimes it's the accountant's fault. Sometimes it's this, sometimes it's that. But regardless, as the orchestrator of this investment, if you will, if your bookkeeping is up to date and on time, you can easily within a month's time frame provide reports to your investor, not involve the accountant, not involve anybody else. It can go to the investor and you can tap a note to say, hey, I haven't spoken with the accountant yet. We'd still like to talk about this or this or this. And we'll let you know if there's any differences that come about. But then all of a sudden, if it's being done in that fashion as compared to coming to the accountant and saying, hey, by the way, I'd like to reserve 3-4 hours, and it's, April 14th right now. Well, most accountants aren't going to have the time for 3 or 4 minutes on April 14th, let alone 3 or 4 hours.
Absolutely. You get a lot more attention when you're filing your taxes in January than you do in April.
No question. Absolutely no question.
And you know, we could go through just tip after tip after tip is which something we're going to do in June, at June 16th at the Raising Capital event. So I understand at that event you're going to be providing a case study of you know, investment partnership on how they got in, how they accounted for the purchase transaction, their best practices, and then also right through till disposition. Can you talk a little bit more about that case study and what you're going to be presenting at the Raising Capital event on June 16th?
Sure. What we're going to try and do, as you said, is with this case study, it's obviously not going to cover every type of situation, and we don't have 18 hours to talk about it. However, we'd like to draw out for those attending, here's some common situations and pitfalls that we see. Here's some good reporting opportunities, templates. We're going to steal a little bit from our Accountant in a Box program where we have, not that it's the only way of organizing information, but we find it to be an effective way for many people to organize their real estate information. Here's how to, if you will, run some reports, some of the information your investors are going to be looking for. Here's some information Revenue Canada is going to be looking for, along with some of the deadlines associated with that.
Perfect. So you're going to be handing people some templates to help them get better organized?
Absolutely.
Yeah, wow.
People should be able to leave the room after the meeting, not that they should leave unless we're the last speaker, but they should be able to leave and have with them some solid ideas as to, oh, I'm doing this, this, and this, but I'm not doing that. Or alternatively, perhaps they really don't have a system into place or one that they're keen on or that's very effective. Here's how we start the process, at least.
Oh, perfect. That is some fantastic information, and I tell you, I'm really looking forward to hearing your presentation. We've been going through it a little bit, and it ain't your accountant your mama knows. It's hardcore tips to make yourself more money.
I like that.
So what's the, if someone's interested in maybe talking with you or getting a little bit more information, what's the best place to get a hold of you at, George?
Sure. Most people find it probably easiest to email. They can email or go to our website, dubecuttini.com, dubecuttini.com, and our various emails are certainly there, as well as our phone, toll-free, 877-475-3823. But obviously we'll be at the event coming up shortly, and happy to speak with people as they have questions.
Well, and you're definitely, you're always out at every, I don't think you've missed too many rain meetings, have you, over the course of the years?
No, I think we normally hit, at least in Toronto, probably 85-ish percent of it usually, unless someone's sick or there's something really significant going on. I believe we're predominantly out at the events and try to get out to some of the major events in out west as well.
And I know you contribute a lot to them, but you probably go to the events because you probably pick up as much as you contribute, don't you?
Oh, no question. There's so many people there that if you can't find someone to talk with that knows something that you don't know in a particular area, whether that's tax, legal, property management, ideas for managing a property or acquiring a different type of property or geographic area or dealing with the situation you're in, I have no idea who you're talking to if you can't find that person.
Right. And so just as an FYI, George will be one of the experts out at the Raising Capital event in Ontario, which is June the 16th at the International Centre out by the Pearson Airport. The intention of this event is singular, and that is to eliminate the biggest hurdle you have when it comes to investing in real estate, and that's raising the money. And in order to raise money, you have to have a good team member on your side, which is an accountant and a tax expert. And that's why we have George on the call today. If you'd like to get a little bit more information about the event that's happening June 16th, or you like to maybe get a little more information about RAIN, you can always call our office, and that's 888-824-7346. That's 888-824-7346. Or I imagine there's even a link where you're listening to this interview to get more information about this event. Well, George, that was an amazing time. We covered a lot. We got through an entire agenda here, plus some sidebars for my own personal situation, obviously. You know, when I have an accountant on the phone, I want to get some personal advice.
Absolutely.
So thanks for your time. Do you have any final words for the people listening on the call?
I guess in terms of final words, I'd like to suggest people, as they're beginning the process or perhaps fully in already to raising the capital, they keep in mind it's necessary to do this in a what I'll call a business-like approach, show that determination, the diligence. Don't be too cheap in terms of working with advisors. Don't be afraid to go and ask for advice, whether it be through the RAIN form or going to the RAIN meetings, talking to people. There's too much of an opportunity to do things correctly. And yes, you're going to make some mistakes, but let's make sure those aren't giant mistakes. You can live with the small ones and learn from that.
Fantastic words of advice. I think that's a fantastic place to leave off, George, for everyone who's listening on behalf of myself as well. Thank you very much. That was an incredible time on the phone today.
Thank you.
Yes, this is Russell Westcott from the Real Estate Investment Network, your one-stop shop for all things investment real estate. I'm signing off and looking forward to seeing each of you at an event coming up very soon. Bye for now.